I'm Miles Kupeka, the big, big dreamer. I'm a gastronomist, restaurateur, and entrepreneur. Born and raised in Soweto, I've simmered and steamed my way to success. I'm on a mission to find out if there's a recipe for entrepreneurial success. What's that secret ingredient that makes people stand apart from the crowd and build their own businesses?
Welcome to today's podcast. I'm so excited. I'm with an amazing young lady today, Retang Phatla, who is what I call the tea lady, actually. It's our own private joke. She makes the most amazing indigenous tea. Retang, welcome to the show. Please tell us more about yourself.
Thank you so much for having me. So, like you said, I'm Retang Phatla, born and bred in Sekhukhune, Limpopo. And I've basically just been on a journey of what I call social entrepreneurship. And I've just been kind of trying to build my business, the tea business, around that. And I've actually started to dub that name the tea lady now. I even made that my social media handle.
It's rather cool, yeah, right? You're owning it. Yeah,
I'm owning it.
So tell us where it all began. Because, I mean, you know, you're on an amazing journey now, but every journey starts with a step, right? What was your first step?
Well, the first step was realizing that I wanted to be an entrepreneur. At the beginning, I didn't really know what I wanted to do in the entrepreneur space, but I was working a 9-to-5 in the construction industry, and I was getting really frustrated with a lot of things. And I was just like hopping from job to job. And then I realized I kept thinking it's the company or the people, but like when I was on my third job in the space of 2 years, I realized, okay, something's wrong here.
Millennials.
I know it's really bad if you're not, like I heard today, actually, I was in a workshop and they said with Generation X, it was really bad if you couldn't keep a job for more than 10, well, or if it was less than 10 years. So anyway, concurrently to that, I was doing a lot of community work. So my mom started an NPO called Siapila Youth Support Services. So I started getting more involved. So every weekend, I'd just prepare to do community work. I'd run a literacy program in Mamelodi, working with young kids, you know, doing youth development activities. And through that, I started realizing that, you know, my calling is more in communities and in empowering people. And my mom then started moving more into the rural areas and working there. So she started working in Limpopo, where we come from, in Sekhukhune, because she actually wanted to retire and leave my brother and I with the community work. But she didn't, she couldn't retire. When she got there, you know, she has she's a really strong community activist. So when she got there, she started doing her community work. You know, she's supposed to be chilling with the village woman, you know, but she ultimately did start doing that, learning to cook with them and experience village life. But through that, she started realizing that there are secrets that are kept at the village, you know, things that the village people are eating and drinking and a certain lifestyle that most people aren't aware of. And the whole image of rural life is, you know, poverty. And living there, she realized it's not really poverty. There's no poverty here. People are living very healthy lives. You know, they're walking distances to get water. They're farming, you know, they're living very self-sustainable kind of lives.
So before we get there, because I guess that was the genesis of actually the product that you're going to tell us about. So was there a specific career that you wanted to pursue? I mean, you mentioned construction. Did you study to be in that space? How did that all pan out?
So I studied to be a quantity surveyor, and then I started working as a quantity surveyor.
So you completed your studies and you went to work as a QS?
But I didn't reach the level I was meant to. Like, I didn't do my honors and things like that. So before I did honors, I wanted to work first and actually understand what it is that I'm studying. And how I chose that career, I actually had no idea what quantity surveying was, to be honest. I didn't know what I wanted to study. I loved drama as a kid.
How the hell do you end up in QS from drama to...
Yeah, my dad won't be happy if I say this, but he really didn't want me to do drama. And I loved drama with everything in me. I adored drama, but he was just like, no, you're going to be broke. You know, you're not going to make a career out of that.
You're obviously our second guest. So I can say 2 out of 2, which is 100% of our guests so far, have said that their parents technically guided them to a profession they weren't even excited or skilled for.
Yeah. Yes. And I don't blame them. It's what they knew. Because, I mean, my dad was a doctor, but he struggled to get to where he was. You know, he was
a medical doctor.
Yeah, a medical doctor. Mm-hmm. But he was struggling through the apartheid regime. He was an activist in that time, and he really struggled to get to that point where he was a doctor. It took him very long to obtain that qualification. And for him, ultimately getting that qualification set his life apart from a lot of his peers that he grew up with.
So he obviously wants that for his children.
Yes. Obviously, that's what he knew. That's what he still knows, you know. And he just didn't want me to struggle, really. Struggle through something that's not, you know, easy and
Do you still have the same perspective now that you know what you know? I mean, do you think any profession that's not a STEM profession, you think you'd still struggle in arts or entrepreneurship even maybe?
No, definitely not. You know, I look at a lot of actors that are doing great things around the world. South African actors coming from very difficult circumstances.
Hey, Trevor Noah.
Look at Trevor Noah.
Yeah.
I always look to that example to say, you know, I can't imagine the conversation Trevor had with his mom saying, Mom,
he's going to be a comedian.
He's going to
make people laugh.
You know, like I can't imagine his mother taking him seriously. So it's those kind of dynamics.
That's because she was busy laughing.
Yeah. So that's what I wanted to do. And that's why I struggled so much throughout even my studies, throughout my career, because I just felt like I was in the wrong place.
And do you have siblings?
Yes. I've got an older brother.
Did he have to go through the same pressure?
He did, but it's actually through him that I gained the courage to get into entrepreneurship, because he started a lot earlier. He wasn't an academic. So he left varsity a bit early, and then he started trying to run a business when he was in high school. And he's a serial entrepreneur. So I gained the example of entrepreneurship through him. So when I decided to quit my job, I first thought what I knew is construction. So I tried to start a little construction business. You know, I'd gained contacts in the construction industry and I thought I could make it work, you know. Mm.
Did you speak to your brother before you started your business? Did you, and would you consider him some sort of a mentor or not?
Yeah, definitely. I spoke to him every step of the way, you know. I ran a lot of ideas through him before, you know, concurrently to wanting to start the construction thing. I wanted to start a vegan restaurant as well. So I bounced a lot of ideas off of him, but everything he said made me believe that I could do it. I had no fear, but I was like, I had blind fear at the same time. I thought, you know, but he gave me the courage to take the step into entrepreneurship.
So would you say it found you, or was it something that was just maybe native in you? It just needed someone to water it. I mean, the entrepreneurship.
Yeah. You know, when I think about it, when I started going back home more to Limpopo and learning about like my grandparents and what they did and their lifestyles, I learned that they were also entrepreneurs. So the entrepreneurial line actually kind of stopped with like my parents' generation, because they were more, they chose the academic and professional work life stream. But my grandparents and my great grandparents, they were entrepreneurs. They were running grocery stores in the village. They were selling firewood.
Wow.
You know, there were a lot of different businesses. One of my dad's uncles had like 4 farms in the time of apartheid, you know. He was a very successful businessman. He's still remembered as one. So I only realized later that this is in my bloodline, you know.
You know what I've also discovered as I'm busy on my book is that it turns out entrepreneurship is generational in that there's a generation that grafts hard and creates enough wealth to take their kids to good schools. And then those kids tend to then corporatize and go, they either join the family business or they go make their own. But then you lose the entrepreneurial spirit for a generation or two. And it seems like it comes back every so often.
Yeah. That's the example of my family.
Yes.
It came back through my brother and I look at a lot of my cousins. They're also starting to follow the same path and we're all just hungry for it. So.
And did your dad come around? Has he warmed up or is he still thinking tisk tisk tisk?
He's warming up, that's what I'll say.
He's not there yet.
But you know, as he sees my progress and my achievements, he's warming up.
No, and I spend a lot of time on this because you know there's another you sitting somewhere. And they're having exactly the same issues, you know. They need to come out of the entrepreneurial closet, as it were. And it's not that they fear is in the capabilities. It's just the societal fear, you know. So what would of advice would you give someone who was sitting in your position?
You actually have to be rebellious. Like, that's the only way I can put it. You have to rebel against the system and society's beliefs and thinking, but be respectful to your parents at the same time.
Yeah.
You know, you still need them.
Yeah, because they'll fund that.
Yeah.
But the rebellion part is an important one because in essence, that's the energy you need to propel your business. It's the belief that despite what the world says, you're going to be successful.
Yeah, yeah. And that's what got me where I am. And I didn't do it consciously, but I guess I just had a rebel inside of me. But
it sounds to me that your mom is slightly different. It seems she's like, show me and I'll conquer it.
Yeah.
Do you think that kind of helped you a little bit? And tell me, once you got to the rural community, what were you discovering and whilst watching her do her thing?
I'm very blessed compared to the struggles a lot of entrepreneurs go through, because my mom, at least, you know, she was completely on my side. And if she wasn't on my side, I could have easily, you know, went back to the 9 to 5. We've walked together every step of the way. So ever since she started working in the communities and she discovered what she discovered, which were these teas, and she brought them home to me. From the day basically that she brought them home to me, we took on a path together to.
Did you see it immediately? Did you know at that point that there's a business in here?
No, I didn't. So when I first drank them, I was like, okay, this is a nice tea.
Mm-hmm.
And then we went on to get them analyzed to actually find out what are the nutrients in here? What does it do? Because yes, the community was telling us a lot about what it does, but, you know, once we got the science to back it up, then that started showing us that this has to do something in society, you know, especially because people are becoming more health conscious.
Right.
And
so tell me more about it. So it's essentially a tea. It's a root based tea with herbal and health properties, I suppose. So, yeah, a little bit more about it.
So one's a root and one's a leaf.
Okay.
They're very interesting plants. So
I love the fragrance, by the way. They smell amazing.
Thank you. So the plants on their own, even without the infusions, taste really great as well.
Mm-hmm.
They have a very pleasant taste. In terms of the health benefits, you know, like the root tea is high in fiber, beta carotene, and zinc. And, you know, straight from the roots, like untampered, we haven't changed the chemical composition of these plants at all. And the leaf plant, which is called tepane, is really holistic. It contains all the vitamins, vitamin A, C, E, zinc, iron, calcium, you know. But to find something that tastes great as well made it very easy to work with. So I started getting into the kitchen and experimenting at making infusions with them. I just started adding herbs initially, like ginger and cinnamon. And then as I exposed it more to people through farmers markets and things like that, then I started getting more ideas on how to expand the range and create different flavors. So people who started buying it started even doing other things with it. Yes. Yeah, like baking with it.
So it had a cult following all of a sudden. But you mentioned something interesting earlier. You said you then took it to the CSIR to get it analyzed. So you knew there was anecdotal evidence that it worked because the communities have been using it and it's been working. But then you went, your science part also said, look, let me go find the proof scientifically that it actually works.
Yeah. Mostly because that's what the market wants, like the scientific proof. But we could feel it even ourselves that these teas work, you know.
Yes.
But the science side also then assisted us to give it more weight in the market and make people believe it even more.
And then you went to sell it in markets. And I'm trying to draw an arc here from, you know, ideation to minimum viable product to a point where you now get people to pay. Because entrepreneurs forget that no matter how great your product is, if no one is willing to exchange a rand for it, you actually essentially don't have a business, right?
Yeah.
But there are also a lot of people who overthink it and they never get to the part where they get to a market and sell. So you went to a farmer's market, which is something I'm a big proponent for. What happened when you got there?
So when I got there, I didn't overthink anything, firstly.
There's a good trick.
So I got there and the market manager was like, okay, your packaging sucks. Go do something about your packaging. Because I showed her in like brown paper bags and then I had like iced tea bottles from
the
console.
PET bottles.
With no labels or anything. Yeah. So she's like, okay, you can come sell this Sunday at the market if you do something about your packaging.
Right.
So I went home, quickly went on Google, looking at ideas, and I just designed some labels and then put it together and got to the market. And she was really impressed. She was like, wow, you turned it around so quickly. I didn't expect you to come up with this. But at that stage, we weren't really trying to say we're running a business. We wanted to do the market research and test it. And this was even without flavoring it much or anything. But we did well, you know. The first market we did really well, and then we just continued, and we took customer feedback and we'd improve the product and come back the next week and try something different and get feedback and so forth. And that's how we did our product development, directly through testing right on the ground from consumers. And then at least we were selling something, so we were able to fund our market research through those sales.
And then what was the next big step?
So the next big step was trying to get funding, which we really struggled with. So we started knocking on government department doors.
Now, I want you to tell me the truth here, because this, if we don't solve this through lived experiences and journeys, we won't know where the real root problems are, right? So I want you to take the time here and tell me exactly what your challenges, frustrations, and the wins, right? If there were great guys who helped along, we should celebrate them. So what was your journey, private and public?
Okay, we thought, okay, we want to get this product into retail. That was what our thinking was. So we do need to do the product development more to a retail standard. So we started at Agricultural Research Council. So we met a lady from church randomly. We were actually just selling tea at church. And then
that's actually a good place to sell tea.
So we started selling one Sunday at church, and there was a lady from the Agricultural Research Council, and she said the ARC assists with these kind of products because they work with indigenous-based food products. Right. So we went there. We didn't really get help. They said to help us, they're going to need funding from somewhere.
Oh, my goodness. Right? So the funder said they needed funding.
So, yeah, well, we thought they would be a funder, but they're just like a government parastatal. So their work is to do product testing, cultivation of indigenous plants and things like that. So they said, okay, we're very interested to work with you, but we're going to need funding from somewhere. We're going to have to write a proposal to get funding. And then they sent us to the Department of Science and Technology. So we went knocking on the doors of Department of Science and Technology, hoping to get funding. We were well received, But, you know, it wasn't very easy to get to the next step. So then they introduced us to the CSIR. The CSIR assisted us in terms of writing a business plan on our behalf.
Which is a weird department to be doing that, right? Yeah. Because they should be just doing testing on the validity of your product. But they were helping at least.
Yeah, they were helping at least. So, you know, part of the proposal was to do the testing and validity, but to also build us an agro-processing plant, which is what we wanted.
Oh, so that's the business plan part.
Yeah, we wanted a factory. So, because we had land, we just needed the structure. So then...
Why didn't you go to private sector at this point?
We didn't know, really. We just didn't know where we're just going where people sent us, and you know, one thing led to another. Mm-hmm. And then, okay, the Department of Science and Technology said, okay, look, they accepted the proposal, and then they put us in a program for indigenous knowledge based entrepreneurs, right? And then instead of funding us, they sent us to an incubation program, which didn't really work out, to be honest. We're still battling. But they funded that incubator to incubate us, but we didn't really get
any value
from that. So then we started knocking on other doors.
So just on that, because these are all parts of the ecosystem, right? Mm. Why weren't you getting any value there? What was, in your opinion, what was wrong? Well, what is wrong with the incubation model?
To be honest,
as a recipient,
it's. Most incubation programs are run by people who haven't been in business themselves and they don't really understand, you know, the building blocks from the ground up of building a business from scratch. Mm. So we just had those kind of challenges where they didn't really understand what we were trying to do, and they were more focused on really internal administrative things and whatever, office activities, and not so much working with us on the ground. Mm. But that was good for us because it forced us then to go out and try other avenues. Mm. But
on that though, what would you have wanted? Because this is also the idea, is maybe they don't know what they don't know. So what do you think they could have done differently that would have been helpful for you guys at that stage?
Yeah. You know, it's really... not treating a business like... So what a lot of incubation programs do is they'll put different entrepreneurs in one room together who are in totally unrelated spaces, you know?
Unrelated industries. Yeah.
Somebody's in engineering, another one's in construction, another one's in the food industry, and you're all together and they're just applying, you know, one model to all of those. But I think if the programs were more individualized, you know, and they could focus... industry by industry, there'd be a lot more value out of that. But you know, just putting people who are also at different stages in business in one room and putting them in a workshop, you know, it really, it's beneficial to an extent in terms of just getting basic education, but in terms of really assisting entrepreneurs to accelerate, it's not really.
And on the finance side, you know, getting the capital for the factory or whatever, what would you have done differently? Because you've seen it from this side. So if you now were yielding the big purse and you were the minister in charge, what would you do differently in this space?
So we didn't get capital immediately, right? We actually didn't get capital at all from these people that we were knocking doors on, including the private sector. So we went... back home and started, you know, asking family and things like that. And we put money out of our own savings to build the business. And money that we'd make, we'd generate, we'd put back into the business. Up to this point, that's how we've, you know, made the business work. We still haven't received any funding. But to some extent, I feel that you have to start out that
somewhere by yourself.
Yeah, because there's a huge chance of you misusing those resources. You know, if I look back and if I had gotten R1 million when I started, I wouldn't have really known what I needed and what the right things are to do with that. But if I was a minister sitting with money somewhere and I look at a business and look at what they've achieved on their own,
Use that as a basis
to fund. Yes, use that as a basis to fund. And also don't make the, you know, the bureaucracy around getting funding in this country is just really, it's really tight. Make that
we've
a
had
bit
that
easier.
Conversation many times. I think they know it as well.
Yes.
Why does it persist, in your opinion? Like, I mean, do they know what it is? What is it? Like, I want us to solve the problem.
Yeah, you know what? It's different. We are living in different worlds. Entrepreneurs and government are living in
private sector.
We're living in completely different worlds. And I think government employees, they're just following procedure. They're not going to try and question or whatever. Mm. And if policies are written in this way and this is how it has to happen, you know, that's it. I think the conversation probably needs to start at a policy level.
Mm.
But also just general understanding from government officials to, I don't think they truly understand the importance of entrepreneurship to the economy and the impact that it could have. If you look at many countries in Africa, like the economies are built on small businesses rather than big corporations. And if we had more of an understanding of that, I think we'd do better as a nation.
Someone said that the reason why everybody who's a gazillionaire is self-made is because there was no one willing to help them.
Yeah.
And we're discovering it as an entrepreneur that, you know, you're not self-made because, oh, it's so cool, I'm self-made. You're self-made because you had no choice. You had no one else but yourself to make it work.
Yeah.
With that being said, though, I'm starting to think that, to your previous point, the solution is actually having more successful yous.
Mm.
So the more you become successful and rich and you run a multinational tea company, it is the likes of you who are the best placed people to go fund other entrepreneurs as angel investors. What's your thought on that?
Absolutely. We need to create that kind of an ecosystem, you know, as entrepreneurs. And we need to shift the blame off of government, or we shouldn't be dependent. We should realize that we should stop trying to be dependent on them and shift that away and create more of a self-sustainable ecosystem for entrepreneurs, not only in South Africa, but in Africa as a whole. And I think that's a model that can definitely work better.
So now then tell me more about your tea in terms of what is it called?
Oh, yeah. I haven't spoken about that.
Yeah.
So the brand is called Sejong.
Mm-hmm. Sejong,
yeah.
What does that mean?
It means culture in Sepedi. But even in Tswana, Sotho, it's called Sejong. So it's not wrong. So basically what we do is we forage for wild indigenous plants and we process them and craft them into herbal infusions. So we use those plants and create blends and flavors that have both healing properties, but they're also like really enjoyable and completely organic, straight from nature.
And with that, then what's the go to market? Are you going into retail markets or where's it? Where's it suited? Because you said it's got medicinal properties. Mm. Is it a pharmacy product or is it just a casual tea that I can have?
The nice thing about it is that it fits into a lot of different segments. So it definitely fits into the health space. But because it's also artisanal, it also fits into your organic grocery stores, into your restaurants, bakeries. And so that's been our strategy. So we are infiltrating the health market as well as hospitality. So right now you mostly find us in your organic grocery stores.
Mm-hmm.
One example is Jackson's Food Store. And then you'd also find us in pharmacies around the country. One is called Kalapeng Pharmacy. And then you'd also find us in beauty spas.
Yes.
Like we supply the Legacy Group that have a few bush spas and hotels. So you'd find us in different places. But we are working right now on a mass market, more commercial product.
Oh, yes, because you're working on tea bags as well now.
Yeah, yeah.
What do you think the challenges are when to go into retail? Is it hard, or your journey has been relatively easy? What's been your experience? Because I've heard some horror stories.
Mm. No, it hasn't been easy. Mostly around payment terms for suppliers in retail. And I mean, we're small businesses, so we need cash on delivery. Like, our cash is our lifeline, you know. And a lot of payment terms from retailers are very unfavorable. So,
and it's weird. We always put too much focus that government doesn't pay us on time and stuff. Meanwhile, it's equally important from a retail, and they don't get, they still give you the 60, 90 day payment terms.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think that's a section where government does need to play a part in terms of looking at regulating systems in that side. And
in the private sector side.
Yeah. Mm. And we talk about BEE points and things like, I don't want to really play that card, but...
Mm. No, play. Dish it out. Mzansipoli.
Yeah. You know, to be honest, I think if there was kind of a way where, and maybe there is, where retailers can actually earn more BEE points
by
or something by paying small
businesses.
Wow,
I think we might have just come up with something totally cool here.
Yeah, something like that incentivizes.
How big of a problem is that?
I'm facing it with 70% of the retailers I'm supplying.
And of course, cash flow, as you and I know, is what makes or sinks a business, right? Because if you're not turning the money in, you can't pay salaries, you can't buy stock.
Exactly.
And
and you end up having to look, asking the bank for overdrafts and buying things on your credit card and things like that, you know. So it's a reality, you know. I have a lot of money sitting out there that's not in my hands. And if you do have a surplus of money that you can, like a lifeline, money that you can still run the business from, it's fine. Mm. But when you're really starting
is when you need it most. I think Nigeria, if I'm not mistaken, has made it such that small businesses don't have to pay tax.
Yes. Yeah.
Wouldn't that be cool?
That would be amazing. Yeah, you know, because even as a small business, one of the challenges you have to face is you want to get into retail, but they want you to be VAT registered.
Yep.
You know, now all of a sudden you have to start paying VAT.
And then that's another cash flow issue.
Yeah.
And then also, actually, maybe whilst we add it, it's not that we want freebies, right? It's not that we should be exempted from tax because we think we're special. Mm. My issue is, I don't mind paying capital gains tax when I'm selling the business.
Yeah.
Then give me, like, even take 60%.
Yeah.
But as long as I'm putting back the money in the business, we need that cash flow to be able to organically grow and perhaps even hire more people, right?
Mm-hmm.
So who taught you how to manage finances? Because, you know, that's the thing that I also find interesting. Mm. No one that I know has ever gone through university and you go to cash flow 101 class. Mm-hmm. Like, it's assumed you know how to manage money. But so what's your relationship like with money?
Well, to be honest, that's where my background as a quantity surveyor came in handy.
Mm.
Yeah, because that essentially, as a quantity surveyor, you're like an accountant of the construction industry. So from that point of view, I was able to manage the business of the money's business and stretch the little we have, you know, to get more out of it. So I don't really have an issue, but it's... The issue I'm starting to have now is that I actually want to separate myself from
the business,
the financial aspect of the business.
Mm.
Because, you know, once you start hiring people and things like that, then you become the face of money. And I'm not very comfortable with that. But in terms of the money thing, I've seen it as a challenge for other entrepreneurs.
Right.
Yeah.
And how big is your team now?
So we have a team of 15 that do the primary production.
And women, I'm assuming.
Yeah, women. And then we've got 5 youth that we employ to do the packaging of the product. And so that's 20.
Yeah.
And then on the sales and marketing side, what we've done now is that we have agents and they get paid on a commission basis. Yeah. So it's much better. And wow.
Have you mastered the art of managing? Because I also find it was the most difficult thing to me, managing people. How are you coping with that?
Yeah, I'm not coping.
I love the honesty.
Yeah, no, I'm not a people's person. I like working alone.
Because you get stuff done, right?
Yeah.
In the way you want.
Yeah, yeah. So that's been a huge challenge. Mm. Yeah, but I'm learning. I'm learning how to work with people.
Would you say you are happy?
I am happy. I'm fulfilled. But just because I'm happy doesn't mean I'm not stressed all the time. Yeah, I have a lot of stresses and things, but I'm fulfilled. Uh-huh. Yeah, so I mean, entrepreneurship is it's such an emotional journey. You know, there's a lot of highs and lows. So there are very bad days and there are good days.
On your worst day, like your worst. I mean, this was like you know the lowest. If I came to you and I said, listen, you don't got to do this anymore. Mm. There's a nice cushy corporate job, air conditioned, nice car. Would you have taken me up on that?
It's so funny you say that because I had that bad day today. Like today.
Really? You hide it well.
It's just I think when I start talking about the business, then it kind of reminds me why I'm doing it. But yeah, I had one of those bad days today where it's just like I started thinking about it, like maybe it would be easier to go back. But conversations like these now are like refueling me and saying, no way, right? I won't give it up. Yeah.
Because tomorrow the sun shines and you.
Yeah.
And what has been the most enjoyable part of being an entrepreneur in your mind? Something you didn't think, you didn't see coming, that it would be something you'd actually end up enjoying it so much.
Yeah. So that, like, there's no monotony. Every day is different, you know.
Love that.
So every day is different and you can end up even in another country tomorrow or, you know, it's an adventure. So I've really enjoyed that part of it.
And one day when you have kids and stuff little Sipo comes up to you and says they want to, I don't know, go to Europe and play guitar for 3 years. I mean, because that's what you sounded like to your dad. You understand? I can't say another interpreter because then you would understand. No, you got to stretch it out.
Yeah. Yeah, no. I mean,
look at you.
I'd hear them out. And if it makes sense, then definitely go ahead, you know. But if it's just like, if this, it's not going anywhere, as long as it makes sense and I just believe everybody has a purpose, you know, and if it's like aligned to their talents and purpose, then for sure. But if they're not good at playing the guitar, I'm not going to do that.
And so where to from here? Where do you see this going? What's your vision for your business? Mm.
So the next 10 years is really focused on penetrating the market. You know, we've worked very hard on getting the foundation right. So now this year going forward for the next 20 years, we'll be pushing the product.
Wow, you're thinking that far ahead.
Yeah. The thing is, like, you can't get complacent with entrepreneurship. There's somebody who'll come along better doing something more innovative.
But what if I came or I know a very loaded company that says, you know, we kind of like your tea thing, Miss Tea Lady. And they put up some numbers and say they would like to buy it this year.
If the money's right, I have a lot of other business ideas as well. So might be open to it. It just depends.
But right now it's your baby. It's very focused. So your mom is still involved in the business?
Yes. So she focuses on the production side.
Yes.
And then I'm focusing on the marketing, sales, and the business and distribution. Side. Yeah.
And you said, just to wrap up, you expect to sell it mostly in retail. What about, putting retail stores for yourself, your own retail, you know, like a tea shop, for example. I mean, that always struck me as an amazing opportunity since we have so many coffee shops. Why not have tea shops?
Yeah, but I'm also looking at the way the world is moving away from brick and mortar.
Right.
So we are doing that online. We're employing an online strategy, and we're looking at incorporating the tea shop onto other platforms like Uber Eats and things like that, that are moving more with consumer behavior and things like that. So I don't really see us doing a conventional brick and mortar store, but we'll definitely be doing something innovative on the online space.
Well, I can't wish you nothing else but the best. I mean, this sounds so exciting. You know, if you're listening out there, go try out the tea. In fact, I highly recommend having the tea while listening to this podcast. And as you all know, tea is a very social thing. So invite more people and listen to the podcast while you're having tea. Thank you so much, Rita.
Thank you so much for having me. Just to anybody listening, they can buy our tea online at sitsong.co.za.
Awesome. And we'll put the link on this podcast.
Okay.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I hope you had fun.
Yeah, I enjoyed the conversation.
And I hope for a lousy day that it was today.
Yes, it reminded me why I'm in love with entrepreneurship. So.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to another episode from the Solid Gold Podcast Studios.